This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. The Jefferson Parish Ethics and Compliance Commission meeting last Wednesday about the Inspector General and a public letter that was issued by the Inspector General without giving any of the participants in the financing of a particular project in the city of Kenner. Those individuals, many of whom are elected officials as well as private citizens, were very upset by the fact that they were never given the opportunity to opine as to the construct of the deal. And the Inspector General, in a public letter, talked about that that there's no discernible public benefit here as it relates to the project, and that it was not publicly bid. This meeting last Wednesday gave many folks an opportunity to testify before that commission, and they made a decision. And here to talk to us about it is former state representative and chairman of the and former chair of the Criminal Justice Committee, former judge Joe Marino. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel. I appreciate you having me on.
So, Joe, I tried to just kind of set the stage here as to what was happening last Wednesday as it relates to the Ethics and Compliance Commission. Please backfill anything that you think I may have missed.
Yeah, so just to, incidentally, I went to that meeting, and it was my second Ethics and Compliance meeting I went to, the second time I've gone to make a direct complaint against the Inspector General. And just for context, because a lot of people don't know, and we keep, and at that meeting, if you watch it, they keep calling it a $10.3 million brew pub in Gretna, or they call it a Gretna project, or they call it a $10 million project. It's not a $10 million project, okay? It's an it's a state capital outlay funded project. State capital outlay means the parish asked the state to give us money for this project. We spell out what it is we're doing. The state approves it in 2022. We start getting money for it. We're in year three of getting money. And the part that they've hyper-focused on incorrectly is the commercial leasable space. That's just the parish has to put up at least 25% as a local match to get the state money. Okay, so if you don't put up the 25% and it's not certified and guaranteed, then you don't get the big chunk of money, which is going to build a garage, a linear park, The commercial leasable space is the local match. There's also a kiosk that the city of Gretna is putting in on. But in the end, it's about a $28 million total cost project. And the $10 million is a guaranteed part. But the project itself is great. And I could spend the rest of the hour, if you want, just telling you how amazing this project is going to be for Jefferson Parish and the West Bank. But what quickly changed once this public letter dropped in September of 2024, the 19th, I thought when I went to the council meeting in September on the 25th on the West Bank, and I said, no. The information you put in this letter is all wrong. The facts that you have are wrong. And you didn't give me an opportunity to even comment on it, and you just released it to the public. So I thought after we walked through and enough people made a fuss about that to say your information's wrong, your facts are wrong, and you didn't give us a chance to comment, that would maybe be the end of people going around waving this letter. But then it went on again, and it went on again, and it's the Office of the Inspector General and Councilwoman Van Ranken going on a speaking tour on the West Bank to every civic association and group, waving around this public letter again, to almost to this day, still doing it with knowingly wrong facts. So how's that for an intro?
Well, so I went to the public letter. I read it a bunch of different times. And what's interesting about it, it has a recommendation. And obviously there was some investigation here. They say that it's a public letter, but we'll get to that at a later date. But I just want to read what this says. It says the parish could pay off bond debt on the garage of $4.6 million. That's a yeah. whole different project, right?
Right. That's one of the
so this
probably
is,
20
this
errors.
This is where I have a problem. So the inspector general has decided that it's a much better use of funds to pay off existing debt than to engage in another economic development project and spend dollars, public dollars, on that project. And what I find very interesting is there's really no information, evidence, or otherwise to back up why that is. I mean, if that's the approach, if that's the mantra of the IG, then the parish basically is on stop until they pay out all their existing debt, right? I mean, that's what she's saying.
To a different project. It's
that's what I'm saying.
Project.
It is a different project. So the only thing you can glean from that is that she believes that the debt on all other projects should, if you carry this into all of what the parish does, that in her belief is that you pay off all the existing debt and you don't incur any new debt at all until all the existing debt is paid off.
Well, let's focus back on her actions, though, and not about whether it's a good project or not. Because again, I can explain to you in as much
detail
as you want.
But Joe, you're missing my point. It's not whether or not it's a good project or not. It's a financial. It's a financial mindset. It's a financial mindset. She has come to the conclusion that a whole different project should be paid off before you even think about involving yourself in a new project.
Well, it's hard to figure out what.
And I'm not so sure that that is the role of the IG, to say as long as you are within the bounds of the bond indebtedness that the revenue can support in the parish of Jefferson, and you have a lot of experts that look there. I mean, I just pull this right off the first page of this letter.
The first page. Well, the law, though, Newell, this is where my focus is shifting from. I'm not going around debating whether it's a good project or not because it's a great project and it's within the law. Her letter is wrong. What I'm going to is, okay, what can the OIG do? Can she investigate? Yep. Do we want her to investigate? Sure do. But the law tells her in the manual that tells her that she wrote Okay, she told us that at the ECC meeting. I wrote those provisions. Well, her manual says this is what you can do when you investigate someone, OIG, and it deals with reports. So before you can issue a final report, the law says, revised statute 42-1161, you have to give the person that you are investigating or the entity that you are investigating a draft copy of your report where you're making your accusations, where you're putting your facts, where you're putting your findings and recommendations. You shall give them 30 working days to respond in writing. Then the law says once you respond in writing, then she has to review that, see if she has to amend her report, do further investigation or not. But most importantly, at that point, when she publishes a report, attached to her report is the rebuttal or the reply of the person that she investigated. And she went around the law by saying it's a public letter, not a report, and not gave anyone an opportunity. It was an ambush. Let's just be clear. It was an ambush, and it was intentional. So in her letter, she defames many people. She has Ricky Template quoted in her letter. She has Jefferson Facilities, Inc. in there. She doesn't represent the facts, but this is how she thinks she's getting around it. She puts out a 35-page letter, which looks exactly like a report. Okay, so what does a report look like? A report has findings and recommendations. So she said, well, it's not a report, it's a public letter. But on the first page, top of the page, it's entitled What We Found. Well, that to me, if I'm the public, that looks like a finding. And now all I'm looking for is a recommendation, and then it's a report. And at the bottom of the page, what we recommend. So there you go. You got findings and recommendations. You absolutely violated the law in not allowing anyone to respond. And had she done that before she released it, you would have gotten about 8 or 9 written replies that would have been attached to that letter, which give correct and clarifying facts. She's still going out to this day promoting that letter with the incorrect facts. That is where it's just, she is just violating everything about her office that she's supposed to be doing. And there's no independence. And that's the independence thing is another issue that we haven't even talked about yet. Her maintaining independence as the OIG. You know, it's not just, she doesn't have to just be independent as it's in the manual. She has to have the appearance of independence too. And when you go on arm in arm with a councilwoman handing out flyers while the Inspector General, Kim Chatelaine, is getting ready to speak at the Civic Association, Jennifer Van Ranken herself is walking around handing out copies of the public letter, and they worked on the slides together that criticized the project. That's the thing that I found.
Those emails, I think there were emails that were referred to that asked that the councilwoman had asked the IG to review her materials that she intended to go out publicly with to make sure that they were consistent with what the IG was saying, which yes. I thought that was somewhat problematic, to say the least, as it relates
that's not
the role of an IG by any stretch of the imagination. But when we come back, I want to talk about this public bid, because I said what we found is that there was no public bid. But what they didn't say is that there are alternatives in state law to a public bid. And that's actually what was used. And by the way, I think Jefferson Parish is probably working on several projects under the same construct that was utilized in this project, but no mention by the IG of that, which I think is incredibly misleading in the way that they characterize these transactions, because they never once mentioned they utilized a different vehicle under state statute. We'll talk about that when we return with Joe Marino. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with former State Representative Joe.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Dana Carvey and David Spade here.
You might know our podcast, Fly on the Wall, featuring guests from across the entertainment industry.
We decided to do a spinoff called Superfly, and it's fun. It's just two of us riffing on current events, pop culture, catching up, impressions.
Joe, Trump's trying to be a dictator.
Yeah, it's a bump on the tater tots.
Joe, no.
Listen to and follow Superfly on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Marino about the Ethics and Compliance Commission meeting that was held last Wednesday relative to actions of the Inspector General. Joe, when I first was kind of reading, this public letter and what was put out there, and by that point in time, I had already been made aware of the fact that the folks behind this project had already decided to engage in a different type of process allowed under state law. I found it to be really misleading to go out there and say what we found was that they didn't follow the public bid law, especially if they knew that you guys had engaged in what is known as a CMAR, which is an acronym for Construction Management at Risk, which is utilized, and it's by probably a lot of parishes in the state, by the state itself and others, and by the parish of Jefferson. And it's curious to me that it's never mentioned in the letter.
It's something I pointed out to them about one of the fundamental flaws of it is it's not even mentioning that it's a capital outlay project, and it's not even mentioning that it is a CMAR project. But I told them that on the public record in front of the Inspector General on September 25th at the West Bank Council meeting, and told her letter's wrong. And to this day, they've never amended or changed her letter. And she's talking about if it would have been done using the old lowest bidding method, there would have been other things, and I don't see that. But again, that's because she admitted she didn't speak to a single person involved in the project before she wrote a 35-page letter about it. And if you would have asked us to reply, we could have pointed out all the things. But again, I think it was intentional. I truly believe it was intentional. And now I know why when I see the roadshow.
I was a little... I read the transcript of the meeting, and I was surprised that no one from the ECC, the Ethics and Compliance Commission, never asked of the IG, what was the downside to interviewing the folks that were involved in this process? Why would you choose to issue the letter and not even talk to these folks as to what was actually being done? I mean, I don't see a downside. I don't understand what it is, unless the only thing that I go to is a statement that she makes in her testimony about her belief, and her belief, I'm going to have to try and find it.
Well, how about her statements that Jefferson Parish is never going to change, that we,
well, that was what I was
going to, anything negative comes out, you attack the reporter if you don't like the message.
Here it is. Verbatim. This is what she says. She talks about her time as being the director of ethics and compliance, and she served in that in that capacity for a number of years, and then went on to work in the John Young administration. And it's interesting because in that role, I don't know what she actually did, because she says she says, and I've suspected, and frankly, I've come to believe Jefferson Parish doesn't have a truly positive relationship with accountability and transparency, because whenever there is a message that is unflattering or inconvenient, or worse yet, politically damning, they have an unrelenting reflex to silence the messenger and kill the message. Well, if it's fundamentally wrong and it's not right, and you don't have a real grasp and understanding as to the financing of government, which she does not, you make mistakes. I mean, it's almost as if she's perfect, because she starts out her testimony by saying, before the committee, this process is not entirely known to me. What these council members want you to do is not entirely clear to me. Really? Although I'm incredibly relieved that at least Councilman Liljeburg doesn't want to see me removed, I'm not sure what he wants to happen, but I'm relieved that he doesn't want to see me removed. Well, who cares? I mean, but I do sort of have this belief that whatever we're doing here tonight, eyes are on us. Yeah. And I believe that how I respond to this moment, but it's not just how I respond, I think it's how you respond, meaning the committee, is going to speak to our relative commitment to independent oversight and well beyond independent oversight. I think it's going to speak to our relative commitment to encouraging or suppressing a culture of speaking up. Well, what is she talking about? Everybody else can have oversight but her? That's what it sounds like to me, because this process is not entirely known to her that somebody's going to have oversight over. Incredible. We'll be right back with Joe Marino. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're going to continue our conversation with former State Representative Joe Marino and the outcome of the Ethics and Compliance Commission meeting on Wednesday about the actions of the Inspector General. There are a number of points that the Inspector General made in the public letter, some of which she points out that the $16.2 million for a garage and that the parish will not own until 2031. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, that's wrong. I mean, the garage she's talking about that the parish isn't going to own is the other garage, the existing garage. It's a different JFI project, completely separate and wrong. I mean, she said at the last ECC meeting again this week, she said, they're attacking me because they don't like my message, but no one has told me anything that's wrong in my public letter. So I hope she's listening today. Once again, no money was donated, no public laws were violated, no bid laws were violated. It was a CMAR project, and your facts need to be at least amended on your public letter unless you want to mislead the public.
So the $16.2 million and the ownership, it has nothing to do with this project. That is another garage project, which these public-private collaboratives, that type of arrangement is not unusual. I know that there are a number of public housing projects that are the same way. You actually turn over ownership to the private entity until a date certain, when they are able to recruit whatever percentage of the monies that they put out to build the project, and you get title back to it at some future date. So, you know, I mean, but to put that like the way that they put it, without further explanation that this is not uncommon in public-private collaboratives, right?
It's very forward-thinking to not use the old lowest bidder method. And I can give you 100 of examples where that's not going right, where the lowest bidder, whether they've ever built a performance theater or not, gets the contract, okay? Whoever builds, you know, the lowest bidder gets to do the project, and then it goes over budget, and then it's not a good product, and it's no good. CMAR, what you do, you go out, and you find the contractors that you want to bid your project. You give them preliminary drawings and plans. Say, I know you are qualified, you're qualified, you're qualified. You guys bid this project with what I'm giving you right now. You go through a selection process, which is all contained in the law. It's revised statute 38:22225.2.3. And there's a process, and then you select a qualified contractor who then, this is the kicker, will give you a guaranteed maximum price. They have to submit a guaranteed maximum price. So that means if the project goes over and it's not because of anything we changed, it's on the contractor. So there is no unknown about how much this is ultimately going to cost involved in this.
And it's so done all CMAR, over the state. The CMAR shifts the risk to the contractor.
And construction management at risk. That's what it's called.
Right.
Yep.
So one of the other items that she outlines is the IG, that is, $10.3 million thus far toward a brew pub and taco restaurant the parish will own but will receive no revenue.
Right. Also wrong. The big thing they're trying to say is that that's the donation of public property or whatever. They're saying that the parish is giving this nonprofit this money. This nonprofit is going to not give the money back to the parish. There's no economic benefit at all. Well, when this capital outlay project is finished, there's going to be a three-level parking garage that is going to be fully paid for by the state of Louisiana, not $1 coming from the parish. That's the capital outlay request. And we have improved drainage because we'll have redone the whole thing. And we have a linear park. And we have a kiosk. And most importantly, at a maximum price of 10.3, I haven't even said that. I think this project's going to come in between 8 to 9 million, okay? The maximum it's going to be is around 10.3. We own, no note, commercial leasable space, prime real estate, looking out onto the river, looking across the it's a beautiful site, and it's going to generate so much economic development all around it. I mean, it is a home run for Jefferson Parish. And all we have to put up is our local match, which incidentally, too, when they wanted to pause it and look at it further, what that would have meant is the local match, which we've already had approved and certified and is part of a cooperative endeavor agreement with the state of Louisiana. We would have had to say, state of Louisiana, I know we're in year three of getting funding, but our local match, which you certified and approved, it's in question now. We're pausing it. That's the kind of damage that could have happened if we would have gone along with them sounding the alarm. You know, in this situation, Newell, sounding the alarm is like walking
into the
hall and pulling the
fire. So basically the allegation is that the brew pub and taco restaurant pays no rent. True or not?
Not true. That's absolutely false. I actually waived the contract at them. The brew pub pays 3% for the first 30 months, okay, 3% of the gross revenue. And then after the first 30 months, we are recognizing that they're investing $2.5 million of their
the restaurant
into the build-out. Correct. $2.5 million from Port Orleans. And let me tell you something. That's a lot of money to try to draw into your project to say you guys are going to be putting $2.5 million into a building you don't own. And then it switches to 6% gross revenue, which incidentally is market rate. So this is the lease that we approved a year ago. And if they had their way, we would be violating or voiding a lease. Well, that's how you get sued. You say, the council approved this lease a year ago. A lot of things have happened. The legislature's gone into session and out again. More money's been allocated again. We're almost breaking ground. And, you know, and this was a last minute, it was an ambush. And
I think
and
at
it's
some point,
not the way
I think
she should work.
And I remember reading some other transcripts, but somebody was saying that, you know, this is a risky venture because it's a restaurant and otherwise. But this organization is not a fly-by-night organization, right?
Absolutely not. And there was a request for proposal for them as well. I mean, this has been so out in public, so in front. There were billboards about this at the site for a solid year talking about the public-private partnership and showing you what it was. And, you know, I mean, but this is just an attempt to harm a project that is, a District 1 project. And you know, I don't like to – this is my biggest problem. When you have a section in the code, in the manual for the inspector general, which talks about independence, and it says under quality standards, which is section chapter 2, section 2, 1, the inspector general and staff must be free in fact of and appearance from personal and external organizational impairments to independence. When that public records request that the advocate did showed that Jennifer Van Ranken, after the public letter was dropped, was emailing Kim Chatterlane saying, please have your staff, the OIG staff, review my slides that I'm going to start using for accuracy to your letter. How is that allowed? How is that not a violation of the independence of the office to be doing legal work for the council person? That's my problem.
It shouldn't be, and it should be everybody's problem. Quite frankly. So the outcome of the meeting, there were a number of people that testified both in favor of the IG and opposed to the IG. The commissioners asked a few questions, some very pertinent questions, and they end up voting, I believe it was a unanimous vote, to do what?
Punt. The attorney for the ECC said you can appoint an outside counsel to look into the ethical and procedural violations of the IG, which is almost identical to what the parish council already voted for at their meeting to retain but they're now taking control of it, saying you guys can appoint an attorney because they had questions and they had good questions. They even asked her, what would you do different now? And she actually responded after hearing all of the comments about how you didn't follow the law and you didn't give people a notice and an opportunity to respond. She said absolutely nothing. She would do exactly nothing different on her public letter. And that, you know, that's offensive to me. And I'm involved in the project. And so it looks like Jefferson Parish, she's right, Jefferson Parish looks pretty corrupt if you believe what's going on in that letter, because she's saying we're doing illegal things, even though she's not specifically saying it, but she's implying it, and she's throwing around accusations, and then she's not correcting it, and then she's not amending it, and she still believes that those things in that letter are facts, and her and the councilwoman are going from civic association to civic association. And then when those people come to us and say, what are y'all doing? And we explain what actually happened. They go, oh, well, that's not how it was presented to us. And I said, right. That's right. You're getting bad information. And that's not the role of the inspector general to go on a speaking tour either.
In her summation of her testimony, there was a question asked why the report as opposed to anything else. As an investigation, and I guess if you're trying to avert fraud, waste, and abuse, it's hard to do that on the back end if you allow it to occur, and I get that. But she says there's a question of the garage being built. or whether or how much parish funds is going to have to go towards that garage, and yep. where we're going to get the money to make up the difference. Well, she's already yep. presupposing that there's going to be a cost overrun. Did she ever articulate yeah. how she knows that? I mean, does she have some kind of financial crystal ball that because under the construction management at risk, under the CMAR, you really minimize that in large measure.
Well, first of all, here's the answer to her questions. I don't know how much it's going to cost the parish to build the garage. Okay, zero. That's the state funding part. That's the 75% part coming from the state. It's going to be zero. The only investment by the state, local match, is capped at 10.3. And again, here's the rest of it, which is makes it more ridiculous to me. ARPA, the American Recovery, the money coming down from the feds to help in economic development comes to the states. The parish gets money, and the parish decides we're going to put X amount of dollars, I think it was 15 or 12, in each district. And each district councilman can use this money for a transformative economic development project. They all voted, we're not going to do something little. Use your money for something really big and impactful. That's where this money comes from, that councilman that Templet was starting with and then Edwards continued with. That's where the money comes from. And so we already have that money. We already voted to dedicate it. It's already sitting there ready to go. And what better transformative economic development project is this project, which is going to employ a large amount of people. It's going to be a destination on the West Bank for people to come to this area. There's a linear park. It has indoor-outdoor dining. They're going to be doing concerts out there. I mean, it is a game changer for the West Bank. The parish owns it all, and it's already paid for. And that's the project that they're, you know. The misinformation continues, though, Newell. She keeps saying those same things that you're reading.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've got a text here, you know, local government supporting tacos and beer. I mean, that was just a respondent. You know, it's interesting. Back in the late 1980s, I guess. No, it was late 90s. I went up to Chicago when we were doing our radio system because Motorola is located in Schaumburg, right out of the city of Chicago. And I had a friend of mine in Chicago PD, and I wanted to see their city hall and things of that nature. They had a food court in city hall. Now, they were located downtown, and they had all this public space that they had designed and built out for fast food operations, restaurant operations, and everything in their city hall. This is something that they did back in the 90s. So it's not like this is some groundbreaking revelation of commercial and government funded collaborative projects as it relates to having leasable space to the public. I built a district station in Fat City with leasable space on the first floor, and the district is on the second floor. Why? Because it serves as an economic development for Fat City, trying to encourage folks to come there and everything else. This is the traditional out-of-box thinking, you know, that you want to involve and engage in. And what I don't understand is why, and that's why I go back to the point that I made before about the IG saying it would be a better way to pay off existing debt than to enter into new projects in light of the fact that state capital outlay funds are the lion's share of the funds that are being utilized to benefit Jefferson Parish taxpayers.
Well, I mean, she still doesn't amend it to say I have some mistakes. She's still saying no one's told me anything's wrong. I mean, it's maddening. And it's forward thinking government is what we're doing, and it's a home run. And I'm glad that it wasn't.
Now, whether or not y'all execute on it is on y'all. But the construct of this in advance, you know, The vast majority that I know of in the state of Louisiana have been very successful.
It's not her role to do policy, Norm.
I get it. And that's the point I'm making.
Not policy. Go on that's the council if you want to tell them how to do
that. That's the point I'm making. You know, she talks about politicians. Well, she's trying to be a politician.
She's going to accuse herself of being corrupt if anybody challenges.
Of course, because everyone is, for sure. Right?
Attacking the messenger. That's what we're doing. We're attacking the messenger, smoke and mirrors.
And not the process. But what I heard and what I read.
Talk about the process.
What I read is about the process. And I still don't understand why you would not reach out to those involved to gain a better understanding before you put anything in writing.
Talk about investigations. Okay. She made that abundantly clear. She does not talk about investigations unless she's going on the news saying, oh, yeah, I'm issuing subpoenas, and oh, yeah, I'm going to do an audit. Is this an investigation, and is she ever going to do it? And more importantly, please send me the final report so I can give you my response.
Well, I'm like you when you start out the letter with what we found, and then at the end there are recommendations. It sounds like an investigation to me. And there was one statement.
It's got web feet.
There was one statement that she made that I know is not true. She says, in short, we don't step on other agencies' jurisdictional toes and haven't since this office was created. I know that to definitely be not true. In fact, they very much wanted to be a criminal investigative agency. They did not deconflict, and they caused all kinds of issues. I can speak with experience there. As always, thank you so much, Joe Marino, former state representative, former chairman of the Criminal Justice Committee, for visiting with us today. We appreciate it. Stay the course.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, and on a text line it says, could you please mention who she is? That would be Kim Chatelaine, the Inspector General for the Parish of Jefferson. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.